Happy New Year and welcome back to Lit Up With Love. Before we get into today's episode, we have a word from our sponsor. If you're not cleaning your fitness equipment with the right cleaning products, you may be exposing yourself to harmful chemicals and shortening the life of your fitness equipment. Vaporic Fresh is a company that's been around for nearly 14 years, developing stronger, safer, greener cleaning products, specifically for the sports and fitness industry. Their plant-based disinfecting gym wipes have been trusted by some of the top gyms nationwide for years. And now they just launched a version in canisters so you can use them to clean your fitness equipment at home. I tried them. I love them. You know I love my at-home workouts, so these have been a lifesaver on my yoga mat and my weights. They're available at vaporfresh.com as well as Amazon, so go grab some today. I could not think of a more perfect episode to kick off the new year. We are all setting goals, resolutions, intentions, and a lot of us are looking at our financial goals and thinking about finances. I know I am, especially since I'm getting married in a week. I want to budget. I want to invest. I have a lot of things on my mind financially, and I have a big move coming up. Just so much is going on. So I was so excited to talk to Marita Hansen. She is our guest today. She is a money and mindset coach focused on helping young professionals transform their relationship with money, tackle their debt, and build future plans to support their dreams and aspirations. She paid off over $120,000 in student loans in 3 years and then developed a passion for helping others overcome similar challenges and find financial freedom. Her coaching philosophy blends her personal experience with a holistic approach to help her clients heal old wounds, build repeatable habits, and make money easy. I learned so much from this episode. There are so many tangible tips and tricks, so you need to have a notebook handy, maybe listen to it twice. I know when I listened back the second time, I actually found myself taking notes and learning. So enjoy this episode. Follow her on Instagram at Marita Ray Coaching and sign up for her program if you feel called to. I'll see you on the other side. Enjoy the episode. Here's Marita Hansen.
I am from Chicago and decided as I was kind of looking for colleges, you know, across the high school years, I wanted to get out of town and do something different and decided on College of Charleston, which was an amazing city, brought a lot of different experiences to my life and absolutely loved it until I graduated and had about $120,000 in student debt. I think when I made the decision, I thought someone was going to kind of come through and save me, maybe a family member, some white knight, someone to absolve all of my loans. But come to find out, when I was making $40,000 starting my career, I was going to have to pay them off myself. Should have known that, but it was obviously very overwhelming, you know, graduating college, starting my first job and needing to pay $1,400 a month in student loan debt. So I quickly, you know, I spent about a year kind of wallowing in my own self-pity, you know, guilt, shame that came with being in debt. But eventually, about a year later, pulled up and just decided I was going to take ownership of changing my path. And so I luckily was in a role where I had a little bit of control over increasing my variable income through commissions and sales. So I'm a huge advocate for sales as a sales coach in my day job right now, but was able to build a plan that would allow me to pay it off in 6 years, which still wasn't ideal, but was a little bit faster than kind of the standard 10-year template that they give you for paying off your loans. And through that plan, actually accelerated a lot of what I was doing, got excited about paying it off and kind of navigating the waters of personal finance, and ended up being able to pay that off in half the amount of time that I had allocated. So in about a 36-month period, I paid off $120,000 in loans, all while making a move to Australia. So still living my life, traveling and doing things that I enjoyed, not necessarily cutting all of my expenses or, you know, living in a box down the street. And so since then, I've developed a passion for understanding more around building my own wealth for retirement, living a life and managing money with ease, and helping other women do the same. I believe there's a lot of red tape around the personal finance world, but a lot of it comes down to mindset and behaviors and Once you're able to break through a lot of those barriers and traumas that we've built up throughout our childhood, you can actually create a really strong and exciting path forward. So through all of these learnings across the last few years, I have realized that it comes fairly easy to me, but not necessarily a topic that's fairly easy for a lot of people to talk about. So earlier this year, I started my business, Marita Ray Coaching, which is a holistic approach to personal finance. And so I've been kind of spreading the word on how to make managing your money easy, and yeah, really excited to continue on this path.
That's so awesome. And I love, like you said, that you're able to just talk about this with ease, because there definitely is a blockage for most people. Like, money is this taboo thing, even though we all want it and we all rely on it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that a lot of us grew up not talking about money. So one of the first things that we talk about in my 4-part program is money mindset, because the story that you have around money today likely is attached to things that you learned growing up. So maybe it was your parents arguing about money, or maybe money was just never talked about in the household, or maybe you were taught that it was rude to ask questions about money, and that resulted in you really not learning anything until it was a little bit too late. So there's a lot of money memories that are actually implanted in us from a really young age across our childhood that stick with us even to this day. It might even be something super small that might be impacting the way that you're dealing with money or coming across issues and challenges with money today. So I think that's one of the things, but I also think that a lot of the financial and personal finance world is actually still very new for us just as a culture in general. So we're all kind of learning collectively together, but each of us have a different path that's shaped by a lot of the behaviors that we learned at a very, very young age. So it could look very different for you versus your parents versus your best friends. And so it's all about kind of learning what that looks like for us now and what we want it to look like going forward. Mm-hmm.
What are the steps you usually advise on how to like break down those barriers and kind of relearn what you're supposed to know?
Yeah. So the first part is the scariest, because it's actually kind of addressing what your story is right now. And one of the easiest ways that we do that is just taking a look at or thinking about what your first money memory is. And it might be something really simple. Like for me, it came down to like my Catholic school uniforms and having different ones than maybe some of my peers, or might be something, you know, as young as the age of 3 or 4. And seeing how that money memory, whether it's positive or negative, impacts the way that you interact with money today and your relationship with money today. So starting to use the memories that you know stick in your brain from a really young age and connecting that to how you see money today is one way. And also just noticing a lot of the limiting beliefs that you have attached to money, like I will never be good with money, or I will never have enough, or I'm always just going to live paycheck to paycheck. Never going to be rich, or you have a separation from those who are rich. So kind of acknowledging those thoughts and then starting to prove them wrong. Because if you want to, and you want to write a different story, that's when it becomes more of a puzzle, because money is an abundant resource. We can change the story if we want to. But if you continuously tell yourself those stories on repeat, then that's the first thing you need to address to make a change.
Mm-hmm. So if we went back in time and you had just decided, I'm going to pay this off in 6 years, what were the steps that you took? And then how did it all like play out? How did it happen in 3 years? I'm so curious.
Yeah. Well, first off, for anything debt related, we start by building a plan on what you can kind of afford in the given moment without restricting every single thing in your life. So building a plan by reverse engineering and understanding kind of what's the amount that I can actually put towards my debt at this moment in time. And for me, once I had evaluated that plan, I said 6 years, I can kind of aggressively pay off these loans comfortably based on what I'm making right now. How I accelerated it was by increasing my level of income. So through things like negotiation in my workplace, having open conversations with my employer about money, and performance reviews, raises, et cetera. And then also through the variable components of my income. So just selling more in the role that I was in at the time. And this could come in a role that you have access to variable income, but it also could come through things like side hustles as well, or passive forms of income. So there's a couple different ways to do it, but first kind of reverse engineering a plan that fits with your budget right now. And then if you want to accelerate it, or if you're not okay with that, the length of that plan, trying to find ways to increase the amount that's coming in.
So did you have a side hustle at the time, or was it just through your own?
I didn't have a side hustle at the time. So it was just through me. I was an account executive at my company that I'm still at now, and we had uncapped commission. So I think once I started to see the loan payments going down lower and lower, it was a motivation for me to continue to do more. I had a promotion during that time. I also had refinanced my loans, so seeing the interest rates a little bit lower and having a little bit more control over the process all in one place, that really helped me. And then from there, like I said, it kind of became a puzzle, like this chase to get out of debt as fast as possible. And actually taking a step back and knowing what I know now about like building wealth, it's not always the right choice to just pay off all of your debt as fast as you can. But for many of us, myself included, there was such a stigma with having that, and financial freedom for me at the time meant being completely debt-free. And so achieving that was like such an important milestone for my money mindset. But looking back at it, and this is part of the reason why I'm so passionate about the mindset piece, is that I paid off my loans and I felt a sense of relief in a way and celebrate it to a certain extent, but I still was stressed about money. I still was thinking about money a lot. I still wasn't fully satisfied. And I think that was when I realized that it wasn't just about paying off the debt completely, but it was about the way that I was thinking about money. So it was a really interesting time for me to kind of shift that perspective and make sure that it was showing up in a different way going forward.
Mm-hmm. So I think what I'm hearing is that the one continuous factor is the mindset, and that's the one thing we all really need to work on. And you said that your program is in four parts. So one part is mindset. What are the other parts?
Yep. So the first part is money mindset. The second part is money management. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit more of a loose money management process, because I think it can be so different for every person depending on what fits for you. So not always a stringent budget. The third part is all things credit and debt payoff. I originally started this thinking I was just going to help people pay off debt really fast, but it's evolved a lot into just one small part of the program. And then the last piece is planning for the future. So things like investing, goal setting, a retirement planning, et cetera. But through each of the stages of the program, the mindset piece does come up quite a bit. And I will say that the clients I've worked with so far have all come out with the biggest wins being around how they view money and how money is showing up in their lives in a much different way.
That's awesome. So would you say most of your clients are coming to you looking to help pay off their debt, or is it just also just to manage their money? Because I think like I don't have debt personally, but there's a lot of questions I have about managing my money.
Yeah. So yes, usually they have a specific reason why they're coming. Like they need to set up a more formal budget, or have credit card debt that just never seems to be able to go away, or in many cases, they just don't know anything about investing or how their retirement accounts work. So we do cover all of that, but a lot of them are also just scared of money, and they feel like every time they make a purchase for themselves or for others, they're extremely stressed. Mm-hmm.
So how did you learn how to do all of this, and what resources did you use?
A lot of it is self-taught. So like I said, when I learned a lot when I was paying off my loans about debt specifically, about interest rates, about how to pay that off as fast as possible. And then coming out of that, I started asking questions to friends that I knew were really strong in investing and planning for retirement. And then I started doing a lot of my own research. So online, reading books, listening to podcasts, et cetera. And then started to take some of it with me, but also started to challenge a lot of the approaches as well, because I think in the personal finance space, a lot of people see things as so black and white, and I just really don't think that's the case.
Do you have any resources besides your program that if someone wanted to start learning about this today, like they should look into?
Yeah, I would say there's a couple different things that I'm still reading and I revert back to. So one that I love is I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. He takes a very similar approach to what I do and really roots a lot of his practices in the psychology of money. I'm also reading The Psychology of Money, which is super interesting. It talks a lot about the history of the money industry or the money space and how, you know, you can be the smartest, most, you know, intelligent money cruncher there is out there, but without the right behaviors and the right attitude and mindset towards money, it doesn't really matter. So this has been really interesting and fun and validating for me to read. I also have read and use in my teachings a book called Rich as F-U-C-K by Amanda Francis. She's an online educator. That is much more rooted in like the manifestation, abundance, a little bit more of the energy of money, but it really helps you start to open the doors to kind of welcoming in a different way of thinking about money. And that's really nice to pair with the mindset shifts that we have as well. So those are three books. And then really just any podcast, talking to friends, asking questions. I think just getting started and being more comfortable talking about money is one way to just start to learn more slowly over time. It's definitely all about the baby steps.
Mm-hmm. The psychology of money, that's so fascinating. I'm definitely going to read that. I mean, how do you see the psychology changing actual money flow? Like I don't really understand the how that works. If you can explain.
Well, that's where the energy and the science of it, like I'm, you know, as I learn more and more about this, I become more woo, as I call it, like mm-hmm. learning about the energy and experiences of all this. And so I do think there's part of it that's like the universe, but I'm also practical. So I'm like, I need to understand the science of these things as well. And so I think that the psychology of it, it comes into play with, again, those limiting beliefs, like I said, where it's like, if we're constantly, our brains are putting those stories on repeat that are saying that we can't have these things, that we don't want to have them, that we're always going to be different than someone who has money or whatever it may be, then we'll never be able to welcome it and open it into our lives. Once we start to change those stories to fit where we actually really want to be, then it starts to open the doors to allowing money to flow in. And so I hear stories of people saying like, oh, I finally started to shift my mindset around this and then got three checks in the mail, or I got a bonus at work. And I don't know, you know, how all of those are rooted in the universe, but it does start to happen. I think that's just because you're starting to change your perspective on the way that you think about money. And so depending on what you like to study, I think there's two ways to do it, and both require you kind of changing your perspective on how money shows up in your life.
Mm-hmm. I think the one takeaway I've had, on money recently is just the negotiation part, how literally everything is negotiable. And I mean, you go to a store and just because there's a price tag doesn't mean you have to pay that. And that is the psychology part that I never learned that. I thought that if you go to a store and it's this price, then that's what you pay. But I took a negotiation course at work and he was telling the professor all these stories about how like he never pays the ticket price. Like he always negotiates it down. And so now, even if it doesn't always work, like I've been really, even just like as an exercise for myself, I've been trying to make more of an effort to do that and realize that no, negotiation isn't just like a salary negotiation, which is what I used to think it was limited to. It is like an Airbnb, like I'm going away next week, and granted they didn't lower the price, but I tried, like I had never done that before. And it felt so freeing to like actually look at some factors and say, hey, I'm going to a ski resort and like, it's not ski season. Can we lower this?
Yeah.
Didn't work out, but I tried.
Always ask. Yeah. And that's a thing, you know, the value and the correlation that we tie to time and money, all of those things come to play. And so I think I struggle with negotiation when it comes to like small businesses that I really value, but I absolutely agree, especially when it comes to like big banks or big corporations that, you know, are taking your money pretty regularly, like absolutely. And so I always encourage clients, if they're struggling with like their credit card debt or student loan debt or whatever, maybe call them and say, hey, I'm thinking about, I've been really loyal to you for the last 5 years, but I need to lower my interest rate by at least 5 percentages, you know, in the next 3 weeks. Are you able to do that for me? Or should I shift my business to another bank that's offering that rate, you know, much lower plan? And just asking that question, And if you're telling them that you're probably going to go elsewhere, then they'll want to keep your business. And same at a store. If you're like, I really want to buy these pants, but I saw them at another store that had them at this price, can you honor that? Like, okay, yeah, we'd rather you buy them here than go back to that mm-hmm. other store and buy them as well. So absolutely agree with that. And I think a lot of that avoidance comes from the how risk averse we are as humans as well. Even when it comes to job negotiation, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't want to ask this because what if they fire me? And I, people will come to me a lot asking for talk tracks for negotiation conversations. And I'm like, the worst that they will say is no. Like they will not say like, pack your bags and get out the door. Like if you approach it in a sophisticated and thoughtful and respectful way, they're going to be open to, even if it's not right now, they'll be open to figuring out a plan to get you to that point over time. And if they're not, maybe that's an opportunity for you to move to another company that will value that conversation and pay you more, you know? So like, it's all a conversation. And as long as you're approaching it in the right way with confidence, there shouldn't be as much risk associated with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it all goes back to, like you said, the mentality. It really does. Like this idea that if we ask for more money, then we'll be greedy. Oh, we shouldn't be mm-hmm. asking for that. But really, I mean, you're just trying to like build your own wealth. Like it's not a bad thing. Everyone wants more. And I've experienced it with getting a new job and they give you an offer and then that feeling of like, oh, if I ask for more money, are they going to take the offer away? No, they never take the offer away.
Right. Exactly. And I've been a hiring manager. I just moved out of the role, but I've been a hiring manager for 3.5 years. And so many cases, I wasn't even involved in the direct negotiations of those conversations. It was all done through our recruiting or HR team. So like as the manager, I was not saying like, oh, I can't believe this person's asking for more. Not that I ever would, but like, it didn't even get to me. Like it's really about the company and what they're willing to invest in you because especially if you're an existing employee, like for them to hire someone else, that's thousands and thousands of dollars. They'd much rather give that to you if you're a strong performer or showing the initiative that you'd like to continue to do more. Mm-hmm. So I'm super passionate about that part of it as well. I think that we all need to get more comfortable having those conversations.
Totally. And once the money is coming in the door, your income is increasing, what are your suggestions for managing it? Because you don't want to just then go blow it all.
Yeah, that is one thing I've seen some of my clients struggle with is that lifestyle inflation. As soon as you get a raise, you just totally increase and change the way that you're living. I think that, you know, obviously part of you should be enjoying and embracing that raise. If you get, you know, $10,000 raise, yes, take maybe $2,000-$3,000 of that and change the way that you're living to that certain extent. But for the rest of it, I would say to go and figure out a way to save and invest that money. And one thing that I like to do to get my clients excited about investing, because it is kind of like an unsexy topic, is to pull up a compound interest calculator and see what it will change from a retirement perspective for them to save that $8,000 every year as a part of their raise, what that will mean for them in 30 years. Like that's a lot of money with compound interest growing over time. So that kind of makes it more exciting and encourages people to want to put more money into their retirement accounts, into investing so that they continue to do that rather than immediately go and buy that new car or that new program that they've been thinking about. But I also think that I also very much believe in the fact that you need to celebrate the wins. And so, yeah, go out to dinner, take your girlfriend out to dinner, go, you know, have a drink at a place you've been thinking about going forever and really celebrate that moment. And then start to plan for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I think that's important too, because if you're going to work so hard for this money, like you should also enjoy it a little bit too. Like you can't just wait for 30 years to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing that a lot of clients get stuck on. And we actually were talking about this last night is once you've built out your plan and you know that you're comfortable at the level you're saving and investing for things that are coming up in the future or for retirement, the rest of that money is for you to enjoy and use on things that you really care about and kind of be fun money, if you will. So not feeling guilty when you are using that money on things you enjoy, whether it's workout classes or going out to eat once a week or, you know, your favorite vitamins, who knows? Like it's all about using that money and not feeling the guilt and shame because you're paying yourself first. And the rest of it is for you to live in the moment. Like we're all working way too hard not to use the money for things that we enjoy right now. So that's a huge point as well. Cause I think if people are spending on things that they love, they feel so much guilt because they should be doing more. They should be saving more. And so once you've built that plan, feeling comfort around embracing and enjoying the money you've made.
Mm-hmm. Is there a typical percentage that you suggest for the fund money?
Yeah, I would say about 20% if you can. It kind of is, I always say it's super personal. It's super person dependent, but you know, should be about 20%. So fixed expenses should be about 60% of your total expenditure. So like rent, specific bills, like bare bones, groceries, et cetera. And then about 20% goes into either short-term saving or long-term saving. Probably a split of both, depending on what your emergency fund looks like. And then the rest of it can be for that fund money.
Mm-hmm. And if I tried negotiating at work and my income is not increasing, I know you mentioned perhaps side hustle or passive income. So what are suggestions for that? Like, I'm a lawyer. Like, what are some ideas of side hustles or passive income opportunities I can look into?
Yeah. So it depends on what time spend you're able to allocate to that. But so if you wanted to do something like write a blog, like me, I have a couple of clients who are super interested in starting to do some copywriting side work. So maybe being a freelance copywriter and asking people who, you know, own their own businesses. Like, I'm always looking for people to help me write emails for my email list, et cetera, or for my website, like always open to having people help me there. Or things like, I wish I knew about Rover, like the dog sitting website, when I was right out of college. Like, that's an easy way if you're looking for a pet companion, but can't afford one right now. Like, do that on the weekend or do that during the week. Like, people pay big money for those types of things. Or even just letting your coworkers know, like, hey, I'm always down to babysit on the weekends, or I'm down to watch your dog or your, or house sit for you to make some extra cash. That was another component of my journey. I don't think I mentioned it, but I did do some babysitting and stuff whenever someone was willing to kind of give me an opportunity on the weekends. I loved that stuff because that's cash. So you can take that home and put it directly towards your goals. But yeah, there's something for everyone. I would say, like, if you have a passion for something and you're just thinking about getting started on it, see if you can monetize it. So I mentioned writing, maybe it's podcasting, maybe it's, you know, just helping a friend who you admire that's working on their business. Maybe you can give them 10 hours a week to offload something on their plate. Like, just start asking questions and exploring some of those things that you're interested in, because they could eventually turn into a full-time passion project as well.
Oh yeah. Those are great ideas. I mean, Rover, I'm going to look up that up when we get off.
Yeah. I mean, I use it. I have a dog and I pay people good money when I have to go away on the weekend. I want to trust someone that's going to be able to walk my dog and spend some time with her on the weekend.
That's awesome. So when did you start your side business?
I started it officially in March. It had been kind of ruminating for the last 12 to 16 months. And I had my own limiting beliefs that were kind of preventing me from actually just diving in. But yeah, I launched it officially in March, and I've run two cohorts of small group coaching clients since then.
That's so awesome. So it's always group style, or do you take one-on-one clients?
Right now it's group style. I have had a lot of questions about one-on-one because money is such a sensitive topic. Sometimes folks are apprehensive about joining a group program, but so I might be doing something in the future, but for right now, I really like the group component because it also helps get people more comfortable with talking about money in a group setting. There are two designated one-on-ones as a part of the group program, so we can dig deeper into like your personal finance situation as well.
That's so awesome. And how did you finally overcome the limiting beliefs and launch it?
I kept coming up with, I knew I wanted to start my own business. I knew that it was probably personal finance because of the success that I've had in my journey and how much I love talking about it. But I kept having fears that I wasn't enough of an expert on investing, or I didn't know enough about X, Y, and Z. And I have been in sales for my whole career, and I'm a sales coach now. And so I kept thinking maybe I'll do sales consulting of some kind, but I kept coming back to the personal finance and the fact that particularly women need so much help overcoming and stepping into that space. And so I did some market research and just figured out this was definitely something people need more support around. And need options in regards to like a different approach than what's out there right now. So yeah, I just kept coming back to it despite me delaying and delaying. It was definitely what I was meant to be doing. So,
well, I mean, if you had done the sales consulting, you probably would still be thinking about this, like, man, I wish. Yep. I did that.
So. Yeah. And it might evolve. Like I said, it started with me thinking I was going to help people pay off debt, and it's become more of a holistic conversation. And so it might evolve over time, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, that's so awesome. I mean, what do you have any ideas for the future yet?
Not really. I'm thinking about my Marita Ray Coaching 2.0 program, because some of my clients from the first round are like, okay, what's next? We're ready for that next level of support. I would love to set up a community at some point where everyone has kind of an open forum to talk about money challenges, and either myself or the community answers questions, and then running, you know, regular master classes on different topics, because I love the teaching component. So I'm thinking about that for next year, but nothing too far in the distance. I'm really enjoying the small groups right now.
Oh, awesome. So how do you balance this with your full-time job?
Well, I recently moved from a quota-bearing sales manager role to a sales coaching role. So from an energy perspective, like, I actually am, it's much more aligned to what I'm doing now. I'm coaching in my day job, and then I'm coaching in my side hustle, which has really become like my passion. And so that's helped just from not feeling super burnt out at the end of the day and feeling stressed all the time about hitting my forecasts and hitting my quotas. And then I had open conversations with my employer saying, like, I'm going to be, you know, doing my job. I'll do an amazing job in the time span that I'm supposed to be working, but I'm going to be working in the mornings during lunch and after work on my coaching business. And so I hope that you're okay with that, because this is really important to me. So that allows for me to spend 4 to 5 hours a day. And then sometimes on the weekends, I spend a few hours on Saturdays with some friends at a coffee shop. So it's working for right now. I'm sure I'll need to spend more time later on. But yeah, they've been very accommodating. And because I enjoy doing it, it's a lot easier for me to get up early or stay a little bit later to do this work.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome that you have that open conversation, open door policy with your employer, because I think that's one of the hardest things about side hustles is we're also like afraid to let our employers know that it's going on. And then it ends up building like this whole alter ego second life that you're so afraid to share with others. And then you probably don't do a good job at your real job because you're like hiding other jobs.
Yeah, it is. And it's still something like I'm just now starting to post on LinkedIn, because I also am like, oh, this network doesn't know me this way as well. But I have it fully approved through my employer. My employer is very supportive.
Awesome.
And yeah, I've come to a point where I'm very confident in standing in my space. Obviously, I have to be careful of like how I'm selling it at work or who I'm selling it to. I'm not really, you know, positioning or pitching it on my, when I'm coaching new hires. But other than that, yes, they've been wonderful. And again, it comes back to just knowing you're a valuable employee and having those open conversations.
That's amazing. So when listeners hear this episode, what are some just like your number one tips, takeaways that they could even start implementing today? We've kind of already gone over some, but about mindset and increasing your income, but just some other ones.
Yeah. So the first one I would say is just related to awareness. So in two parts. So one around the mindset piece, like how do you feel about money right now? Is it scary to you? Is it stressful? Is it triggering to talk about money? And if it is, then start to explore that. Like, why is that? Is there something that you were taught or experienced early on that's still sticking with you today? So that's the awareness piece on the mindset. And then the second is on the money management piece. So like actually list out and understand what's coming in every month. Like it might be so obvious because you have a direct deposit coming into your account, but like do a little bit more digging. Like how much am I already putting towards my retirement account through my employer? How much is already going to taxes? Like what's my take home pay? And then on the other side, which is more important, what's going out? Like obviously, you know, things like rent, utilities, et cetera, but what are those recurring monthly expenses that you might have that you don't really realize are a part of your quote unquote budget? And just start to list them out and see what the difference is. Like what is the gap in between what's coming in and what's going out? And obviously, if the what's going on is higher, then that's where we would want to kind of pull up and reevaluate and prioritize based on what you value. And then I think the last piece, I've just noticed there's so much of a gap in understanding and awareness around retirement. So just start to look, if you have a retirement account, look at it, understand it, see if it's growing, because there's so many people I talk to that don't even know what retirement accounts they have. They don't know if it's already invested or if it's just sitting in the container as cash. So just ask some questions to your employer, ask some questions to your family friends who know a lot about this, and just start to create more awareness there. And then just do one thing every day, like try to learn one thing, you know, every day or every week, so it doesn't feel super overwhelming. Where I see people like fall off completely is if they try to jump into this really strict budget because they heard their friends doing really well with this budget, and it like totally overhauls the way that they live their life, and then they give up after 2 months. And so trying to take small steps that help you incorporate it in a much more long-term approach.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for like saving money just in general, like in terms of like looking at my expenses, like what are things I can cut down on?
Well, yeah. So the first part about, so there's two things with savings. Like one, I see people who save way too much money actually, and some people who don't save enough and are overspending. So one thing is get it clear on like what your emergency fund or what your savings fund should look like. So depending on your risk tolerance, it might be a few months of expenses. It might be a little bit more. If you're saving for a wedding or a house, maybe you're increasing that level as well. And then the other part is, you know, like I said, based on your budget, quote unquote, like what can you afford to save in addition to that? So if you've got your emergency fund saved, think about expenses that you have coming up. So do you have a trip? Like, I want to go to Europe next year. I know it's probably going to cost me, you know, $5,000 or $6,000. So like, how can I plan knowing that that's 9 months away? How can I start to plan and save for that over a specific period of time so that I don't come to June and I'm paying for the Airbnbs and the restaurants and the flights and it's all coming to my credit card at the same exact time. So starting to plan ahead for some of those savings expenses, when you know they're happening. And that might mean that for the next 6 months, you maybe need to cut back on a few things. So I would think about like what you have coming up. It might be Christmas right now, like Christmas expenses, start to plan for those ahead of time so that it's not so triggering when it happens all at once.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any like day-to-day suggestions for like ways I could cut back with spending?
It depends. We'd have to look at what you're spending on. So I know you mentioned like looking at your expenses. So if you took that like 60, 20, 20 kind of model and you said, whoa, my fixed expenses are actually 75% of what's coming in. And like, I need to pull up and reevaluate that. We would probably look at, okay, you know, your rent is way too high. Is there an opportunity for us to negotiate your rent with your landlord? Or can you move into a different type of apartment that maybe will suit your lifestyle more since you're traveling all the time? Or maybe you're working out at a gym that's $400 a month and we can cut that down to $100 a month. So it's all about kind of pinpointing things that feel out of alignment. And one way to do that and just kind of track it from an awareness perspective is to download one of those budgeting apps for like even just a month and see if there's anything that surprises you that you are overspending on that you didn't realize. So like mm-hmm. Mint or Copilot or Digit, they all have apps that track your spending via your credit card. So you can actually see if you're not aware of it, like, wow, I didn't realize how much my Ubers were costing me every month. Like I should start taking the bus more. So it's all about kind of figuring out which area seems a little bit higher than one other. And then that's when the power of negotiation or cutting back on specific things will come into play.
Yeah. I just got so excited thinking about too, like there are opportunities that I think sometimes we forget about. Like even I know my insurance at work, like they will give me $150 back on my gym. I haven't pursued that, but like I should, yeah. Like, you know, those are things that like little things that like it matters in the long run and adds up. And I mean, I think that the gym is a perfect example. There's like a difference. Like you can go to Equinox if I'm just using the treadmill, like, do I really need to pay, you know, whatever the Equinox price is these days, you know, like, is there something else I can do? Can I run outside? Like, it's so beautiful in Chicago in the summer. I'm sure you can run outside.
Right. Well, and that's another thing too. It might ebb and flow. Like, there are months in the winter where I'm like, I need to go to group workout classes and I'll probably spend $150, $200 on that in a month. But in the summer, I don't spend anything because I'm spending that same money on eating out a little bit more frequently. And so that's why I don't love having super strict budgets, because I do think it ebbs and flows based on your lifestyle. Even the groceries piece, the reason I said like bare bones groceries is because during the pandemic, when I wasn't eating out, I would go, you know, sometimes I'd have really bougie groceries. I'd have a steak and some wine and make it more of an experience, where if I'm traveling a lot that month and spending way too much on travel, then maybe I'm making chickpeas and like frozen broccoli that week. You know, maybe I'm cutting back a little bit on some of those expenses. And so just noticing where there might be areas where you can also ebb and flow in different months, because your life's not always going to be the same every single month or every single year. But some things are truly fixed and some things are a little bit more adjustable.
Totally. And just being aware, I always think about like subscriptions too. Like I had a subscription to a gym here. I guess it's a membership, and I just wasn't going there, I realized. And I was spending like, you know, $200 a month, and I was never going to take classes there anymore. So I froze it. Like, I didn't want to cancel it, so I froze it for a few months. Sometimes like you can do that if you're not ready to cancel it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also if you've noticed that you've been paying for a subscription or a overdraft fee or a late fee on something for the last few months, call those places and say, hey, I haven't been using this gym. I totally forgot I was still assigned to this. Like, I understand if you can't give me the money back, but can I use this for October and November so that I'm not wasting another $200 every month? Like, just call and ask, to your point from earlier.
I'm glad you brought that back up, because there have been so many times that I was like renewed in something for another year when I thought I had a few more days to cancel it, and I just totally forgot. And I just called and I said, hey, I was literally just renewed for this. I'm not going to use it. Can you cancel it? And they gave me the money back. No problem.
Right. Well, and that's where you'll start to notice too, the businesses that you want to continue to work with, the ones that are flexible and adjustable. I know I do that with like Rent the Runway. Sometimes I'll have a monthly charge. I'm like, I'm not using it this month, but I love your business and I'd love to continue to work with you guys. Can you credit me that back? And I promise I'll use it in a future month. Of course they're going to do it. They don't want to lose me as a customer. So again, the companies that want to keep you, you know, as a client will be more flexible on those payment plans as well.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Those are such good tips. Well, a question that I always ask my guests is, do you have a morning routine?
Yes, I do. This week I've had a little bit of a cold, so I was actually giving myself a hard time because I have not been in my morning routine. But yes, I try to meditate for at least 5 minutes. The morning I cannot do longer than like 5 or 6 minutes. I try to do a longer one in the evening. I have an ice roller, so I de-puff my face because my face is always super puffy in the morning and it feels really nice. And then I also do 2 journaling exercises. So I do a gratitude list. Sometimes it's money related, sometimes it's not. Of 3 things, just kind of a quick list. And then I do a practice called Today I Did It Right, which is a program that I'm involved in. And I get a journal prompt every morning. And it's just something to kind of explore for 7 or 8 minutes, write about in my journal. Sometimes I do it, sometimes I'm not feeling it. But if I'm sticking to my morning routine, that's usually what I do. And after that, I'll have some coffee and either a yogurt bowl or some oatmeal or something, and start jumping into some work.
The Today I Did It Right, what is that? That's cool.
Yeah, it's actually one of my friends owns this business, the community of women. I always call it my journaling group, which is kind of confusing when you explain it to people, but she runs like intention settings at the beginning of the month, new moon ceremonies. And then there's a community where we have a Slack channel and can kind of chime in on different things that are going on throughout the week. And then a journal prompt every day that's sent to your inbox with a little bit of a description that helps you kind of just have some more guided journaling throughout the week. So it's been a practice I started at the beginning of the pandemic, and it's just really an awesome community of women that I love.
What's the name? I would love to look it up.
It's called Today I Did It Right.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely have a look. She runs a lot of different workshops around finding more connection in your life, and it's absolutely amazing. So yeah, definitely recommend.
Very cool. And what time do you wake up?
It depends. Like I said, this week I've not been feeling great, but my puppy usually gets up around 6:45. So that's a good excuse for me to get up. I start work around 8:39. So I'll get up at 6:45, do my morning routine, answer some emails and do any of my Maritere coaching work, and then jump into some of my meetings for the day.
Awesome. Do you have any, speaking of journal prompts, any like suggestions for journal prompts around money mindset?
Oh, I have so many. Maybe I can share some too for follow-up, but one that I love is that we actually were talking about in my group yesterday is, do I feel most comfortable and satisfied in the past, present, or future? And so thinking about, this is could apply to money or just generally in your life. Are you most content in the past, present, or future? And for me, a lot of times I fall into the trap of being most content with my past and looking about my past so fondly, like, wow, I accomplished this. I traveled to so many places. But thinking back on it in the present moment, I don't think I was really appreciating all of the amazing things I was doing. And I was probably worrying about what was going to happen in the future. And so it's a good one just to kind of evaluate life in general and also could apply to money. But the one that I mentioned earlier around connecting to your first money memory and how you see how that relates to your relationship with money today, I always encourage people to journal on that and what's showing up there, because I think that will start to understand what your current money story looks like. Mm-hmm. And then we can start to identify, like, what do we want to keep? And then what are we done with? What do we want to move forward and shift into going forward? And then one final one too, that I kind of came up today as well, is, do I feel a separation from those who are rich or people who have money? So thinking about that.
Those are really good ones. I'm definitely going to implement those.
Yeah. I have a bunch of worksheets with a ton of journaling prompts. So I was on the spot a little bit, but I could definitely share some and follow up.
Can everyone find you in your program?
Yeah. So the easiest way to find some content that's free on my page on Instagram. So at Marita Rae Coaching, MaritaRae Coaching. And then on my website, there's more details on the programs that I run. So www.maritareacoaching.com. And then, yeah, I'll be starting to share more podcasts like this. So some free advice and conversations with people like you. So thank you so much for letting me be here.
Of course. Well, thank you for coming on. And do you have any like group sessions coming up that people could sign up for?
Yes, I have one more that's starting at the end of October for the closing out 2021 with a bang, getting your finances in order before 2022. And then I will be releasing a schedule for the start of 2022. It might look a little bit different, but we'll be launching some new programs in January as well.
Awesome. Okay. Well, the last question that I ask every guest is, what is your gift?
Ooh. I love that. I think that my gift is making people feel comfortable with really challenging topics. So making people feel comfortable talking about things like money or sales or career conversations. I think that I love making people feel at ease and making them feel comfortable in the environment we're in, and helping them grow through that. So I think that this business has helped me channel that a lot more, but it's something that I've recognized over the years in the workplace as well.
No, it definitely is your gift, because it was so easy for me to talk to you about this. And normally I never talk about this.
Oh, good. I'm so happy.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. This is amazing. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Lit Up with Lo. If you enjoyed it, please make sure you rate and review on iTunes. And next time I talk to you, I will be a married woman. So I'll see you then.